All right. Get my Bible here. Well, last week, is that a little loud? Okay. So last week, we walked through kind of the topic of evangelism and being intentional and strategic in evangelism. And if last week I needed some interaction with questions, I really need interaction this week, because that's how I go about things. I find that people learn the best when you ask questions. And ironically enough, this is about evangelism and asking good questions. And so my goal here this morning is to, maybe you don't need convinced, but to convince you that questions, sincere questions, are really the most helpful tool that you have, aside from prayer and familiarity with the Bible, when it comes to interacting with people who don't follow Jesus, or people who they don't follow Jesus. Maybe they think they follow Jesus and they really don't. I think at the outset, any talk about evangelism and sharing the gospel needs to stop and remember that the gospel isn't just like a good deal that any reasonable person will accept. Like, you could ask a zillion great questions, and there's something supernatural that has to happen. There's a supernatural convicting power to the gospel. It isn't just this sort of, you know, a person comes and makes a decision for a benefits package. You know, like you make a decision for Jesus and you get heaven and eternal life and forgiveness, and you feel forgiven, and all those kinds. All those things are true, but the gospel isn't just sort of like this benefit package that you say, hey, yeah, I want that, I'll take it. But we are responsible as Christians for asking good questions, clearing the way. Really, this is almost, some people would probably bracket this as kind of pre-evangelism. I don't know, though. I think it kind of bleeds over. But we are responsible for clearing the way, presenting the gospel. It's a dialogue, not a sales pitch. And I think that's what a lot of people feel like sometimes when they talk to Christians. They feel like this is like a sales pitch. And questions are your best friend when it comes to sharing the gospel. So we'll start with a question. Why do we ask questions typically, just in general? Anybody? Okay, to learn? Yeah? Okay. And ultimately, we do care what they think. Like, we want to know what they think. Questions in general. Can anybody think of just questions in general? It doesn't even have to involve evangelism. Just, why do we ask questions? See what they know. Information, right? So we're getting information. When we ask questions, ourselves, we don't necessarily know the answer all the time. Sometimes we ask questions to try to help people. Does anybody have any other reasons why we ask questions, just as people in general? Okay. Yeah. Like, sometimes, how do you normally? Okay, so I talked to Darwin this morning as I walked in, and I think the first thing he asked me was, how you doing? It's a way to start a conversation. So we ask questions to get information, because we don't know things that maybe we want to know. We use questions to start conversations. Sometimes we point questions when we actually know the answer to something. Like, if I won't embarrass my kids too much because they're here. But like, if I have a question, if something happened, I think, did you do this? And I might already know the answer. Maybe it's a good thing, Jet. Jet's grinning back there. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's not so good thing. But we ask questions when we already know the answer, because we're trying to draw somebody out. Okay? So in evangelism, why should, you actually hit on this before, but why should we ask questions? Why should we ask questions when it comes to sharing the gospel? Yeah. Yeah, you want to You want to listen? You want to understand like where that person is coming from? Yeah. That's good. Yeah. You had. Yeah, that's really good. I'm actually, that's just a little further down, but that's actually right. Sometimes people think they know what they think, but they don't necessarily know what they think. You'd be surprised at the amount of people who've heard certain things at some place and they just kind of latch onto it and they think, oh, that makes sense. And they do it without thinking a whole lot. Okay. So when we look at Jesus in the Gospels, which we'll get to down the line here, Jesus in questions. We're still on number one here. It's kind of a general outline. Jesus asks questions for transformation. Okay? He didn't ask questions because he didn't know all the information. But we ask questions in evangelism, in trying to share the gospel with somebody, because we don't always have all the facts. But we also, likewise, want to see transformation in people. We want to see people move from darkness to light, from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light. That's why we're asking these questions. We're trying to clear the way. So can anyone think of a good spiritual question that you heard someone ask recently? Like maybe they asked you the question, or maybe you had a good spiritual question that you asked somebody else at work or whatever. If you don't, that's okay. Okay, what's your relationship, or you know, what's your intimacy, or what's your relationship with Jesus? How's that been? I think I talked to Will Anderson. He's not here right now, but I asked him this last night, yesterday. I said, "What's a good spiritual question that someone's asked you lately?" And he said something similar. It was actually from a Christian to him. Joe Bridgman asked him, "So how's your discipleship? How's your walk with the Lord?" That's a good spiritual question. Has anybody ever heard, have you ever had any interaction with an unbelief, like somebody who's not a Christian, and they know who Jesus is, and they think pretty highly of him, but they think he's just kind of a good moral teacher? Has anybody ever encountered that in a discussion before? Like you're talking about the Bible, or you're talking about something, and the person says, oh yeah, I know who Jesus is. He's a great moral teacher. What was your response, or what would be your first response if you heard somebody say that? Yeah, Dan. We are not operating with the same. In evangelism, they call these plausibility structures. Like the God, Dave Larsh, I was here last week. He mentioned an encounter that he had with another contractor who totally believed in aliens. Like that, whatever you think about that, this guy believed in aliens, but really didn't believe in the God of the Bible. It's interesting that you say that, Dan, because we live in a climate, in an intellectual climate, in a culture that no longer has what you might call plausibility structures for the gospel. But they do have, it seems more plausible that aliens exist than it does that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Those kinds of things. So that's an interesting, that you bring that up, because we're actually going to get to that in point number two. So when somebody asks that question, though, I immediately want to say, what makes a good moral teacher? Why do you think he's a good moral teacher? Anybody else have a response that they might give to that? Yeah.
I was just thinking of a friend I had who really loved animals and so on. And I might Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all sorts of, I think we talked about last week about access points. We sometimes get scared because we think that people who don't follow Jesus are so unlike us in so many ways, but actually they're pretty similar. Like they might have pets. They all eat breakfast. They all get up and go to work in the morning. Everybody puts their pants on the same way in the morning. So, yeah. So questions in general, we're really after listening and understanding, not just passive. It's not like we just passively listen and we don't actually get to the to answers and things like that. But we're clearing the way with questions. But questions help us in several ways. So questions, the first point I have here is questions help us with self-knowledge. They help us to know ourselves. How? Anybody? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes we think we know what we think. And questions that we ask someone, and people are the same, questions that we get asked or that we ask other people help to clarify our own. They can help clear up preconceptions that we have about things or assumptions. I think you mentioned things that we think about God or eternity, I think you mentioned, or, you know, those, you know, life after death, those kinds of things. Questions can help clear the way and clear up some of our thinking about those things. So questions help us with self-knowledge in the area of preconceptions, bias that we might have, the different thought processes. Okay, like, so how does someone get to the thought process thinking it's implausible that Jesus rose from the dead, but totally plausible that aliens exist? Whatever you think about this, like, how does a person get from A to B? Questions can help you see how they get from A to B. Different assumptions or beliefs. And the reason I'm talking about questions and self-knowledge is because questions also help us with the knowledge of God. Okay? So when you talk to people about God, when you talk to people about Jesus, you will find that there are a lot of biases. It might be the bias that Jesus is just a good moral teacher. He's just like Buddha. He's just like Muhammad. He's just like Gandhi or whatever. There are a lot of assumptions about Jesus and God, what salvation is. Do people even need salvation? Or, you know, what is a human person? Questions can help clarify these. And the knowledge of self and the knowledge of God are very, very important. I'm going to read a quote to you from Calvin from his Institutes. This is the kind of the first section of the section on the knowledge of God. He says, and there's one from Augustine as well, all the way back to the Confessions, where he talks about knowing yourself and knowing God. But Calvin says, without knowledge of self, there is no knowledge of God. Our wisdom, insofar as it ought to be deemed true and solid wisdom, consists almost entirely of two parts, the knowledge of God and ourselves. But as these are connected by many ties, it's not easy to determine which of the two precedes and gives birth to the other. But they're both really important. Like, if you're going to know who God is, you've got to know something about God. But you also need to know something about yourself. Like, what does it mean to be a person made by God? So these kind of go hand in hand. So often what you think, what people think about themselves is directly tied to what they think about God. Like, if you think that you're just a pretty good person, you're basically good. Sure, everyone makes mistakes and those kinds of things. That's going to lead you to a different view of God than a view of yourself as a human person who is sinful, God who's holy, and those kinds of things, and your relation to Him. That's going to lead you to a much different understanding about God. So questions help us with self-knowledge. They help us with the knowledge of God, and they go hand in hand. Questions also help. Aren't questions most of the time? Aren't questions indirect sometimes? You know, like a lot of times, we're asking a question. It's not a direct thing. It takes the pressure off. I've found that oftentimes when I'm talking to somebody who's not a Christian, asking a question takes the pressure off of me, actually. So it kind of moves from the defensive to the offensive in a kind of a subtle way. So, for example, are all people good? Have you ever heard anybody say that? Anybody that you know say, I think people are just basically good? Or all religions are the same. They're just trying to manage people's behavior. That's really common, to think that Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, all that stuff is just trying to manage people's behavior. Or maybe you've encountered, I've encountered this before as well, someone who will say, I would never say that any religion is wrong. That's just kind of out of bounds to say that these are wrong. And I think there are some questions when we encounter these. These are really, really common ones. That's why I picked them to talk about. Sometimes those kinds of things that people say can be met with a question as simple as, really? Do you really think that all religions are the same? Do you really think that all people are good? What about Hitler? Nobody ever wants to say he was a good person. There are always some exceptions. And so it moves it from the defensive to the offensive, but in a way that doesn't seem like an attack. Okay? So questions help with self-knowledge. They help with knowledge of God. They go hand in hand, and they can help take the pressure off when it comes to sharing the gospel. Like, that's one of the things when we share the gospel that I feel when I think, oh no, this is a good opportunity to talk to somebody about Jesus. There's pressure there. I feel it. You feel it. I don't like it. It's one of those things. You know, I heard somebody say that in America now, and this is true in Europe as well, that functionally, when it comes to religion, we're not a close country. You can still come to America. You can still preach the gospel. But when it comes to the social implications of the gospel, we are functionally a closed country in many, many ways. There are certain things that are off limits. Even when you talk about religion, you can only go so far. And I think questions help take the pressure off. They really put it back into somebody else's court and helps them to clarify things and can really clear away obstacles for getting to more specific things about Jesus and the gospel. The last way I think questions help us in evangelism is that they pave the way. Dan mentioned this, that in years past, you might think that people have some point of reference for the Bible, for the gospel, like to understand what the gospel is. But increasingly, these concepts are the concepts that are central to the gospel. Like what's one concept that's central to the gospel? Like, if you don't have this concept, if this isn't true, like there's no. The gospel makes no sense. Sin. Okay, right. Sin. It makes no sense. There is no good news without the bad news. What else? Another? Okay, resurrection. All right. What about God? Something related to God. Okay, right. What? The deity of Christ, right? What about, like, holiness and righteousness? Like, if you don't have a category for sin or that people are fundamentally bad, and you don't have a category for God being altogether good and not like that, then the gospel won't make any sense. It's not plausible to you. That's why it makes more sense that aliens exist. I'm not saying they do. I'm not saying they don't. But that's why it makes more sense to some people. There are plausibilities. Think about questions as a kind of binocular or maybe even a telescope that kind of zooms in on something that makes things clearer. I think these are called plausibility structures. These are called things that make the gospel intelligible to people. And increasingly, we live in a culture where it isn't intelligible to people. Sometimes they may have heard the word gospel, but then they pour some kind of, what did you say that person said, Dan? They pour a different kind of meaning into it. What was it they said? Right. That's the good news. Okay. I'm going to read another quote from J. Gresham Machen. So he wrote this back. He was very prescient ahead of his time. He wrote this in 1913. It was an address to Princeton Theological Seminary, but then it was later published in the Princeton Theological Review. He said this: "False ideas are the greatest obstacles to the reception of the gospel. We may preach with all the fervor of a reformer and yet succeed only in winning a straggler here and there. If we permit the whole collective thought of the nation or of the world to be controlled by ideas which, by the resistless force of logic, prevent Christianity from being regarded as anything more than a harmless delusion." Translated, he's saying false ideas get in the way of the plausibility of the gospel. And it's the greatest threat to being able to give that gospel, to have that gospel make sense to people who need to hear the gospel. All right, so questions help us in several ways. They really help us clear the... Yeah?
So the issue that I've run across is people like to think logically,
mm-hmm.
and the gospel is not very logical in the sense of what we were just talking about, perfect God and sinful man. And so what would you like say of a way to... Because I go with the mindset, and I try and help them understand, let's not think logic, let's think faith, like because I just have to have faith in this whole situation. The way that God operates. And so, I don't know, what would you say of a way of helping someone who can, they just say that this is not a logical way for things to happen?
I think the first thing I'd want to know is, what do they mean by logical? Like, do they mean that it's... I'm sorry? Oh, so his question is that he says people have... The thing that he runs into is people who don't follow Jesus who are saying Christianity is illogical, or Christians are illogical. And so he says he likes to take the option of talking about faith. Can you articulate that again?
Yeah,
of faith versus...
More specific, I was talking to a pastor of a church in a town I used to live in,
mm-hmm.
and in the idea of age of accountability and what we were talking about Hitler.
Okay.
So his mind, he doesn't get how logically God can operate in a way that he lets bad happen and let people be bad.
Sure.
He has created them to be good.
Sure.
So his main idea is, I'm too logical to think that God is going to create people to be bad. If he is good,
yeah.
He creates them in his image, and it's Hitler's
yeah.
fault that he turned that way.
I'm more logical than God,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm way more consistent than God is. No, that's a real question. I mean, essentially, that's the problem of evil,
yeah.
Right?
How do you portray, like, we need to stand in solid faith of God is higher than us, holier than us.
Mm-hmm.
I am a sinner, and at the core of myself, I'm a sinner. You know, let's not think logic, because a lot of things we can't comprehend as human beings of what God is and how God is.
I think I wouldn't want to take the road of, we're not going to talk about logic and reason. We're just going to talk about faith.
Right.
The problem of evil is it's not separate from, it's not a separate question. It's a distinct question from whether or not the resurrection happened. It's really the biggest obstacle for a lot of people. I actually wrestled a lot with the problem of evil when I was in, and still sometimes I'm like, I don't understand this sort of thing. Why certain things happen. I don't think that taking the route of saying, okay, we're not going to talk about logic, or okay, maybe it is illogical. Maybe you didn't say this necessarily, but like it is illogical, or it seems illogical, and taking the route of let's just talk about faith. I don't think that will help people in the long run. It might, like, sometimes people like blowing past the person's questions about those kinds of things might help you in the short term, because they might just forget about the question. But in the long term, I don't think it's going to serve them. Because one example of a doctrine of a central tenet of Christianity is the doctrine of the Trinity, right? There's nothing illogical philosophically, depending on what you mean by logic. It doesn't mean that we understand all of it, but it isn't inconsistent logically or philosophically. Like, we are not the first people to think about these things. Yeah. Well, I don't want to blow past your question. What do you mean portray when you
understand that the Trinity and God is not illogical?
Right. I would want to take them to first to the scriptures to show them that it's actually there. Because if it isn't in the Bible, then why bother talking about it? Then I would want to walk them. If that's a sincere question, like I don't, which for Muslims it is. They have a very what's called Unitarian understanding of the Godhead. Like it's inconceivable to them to say that God is one, but he's three. It's inconceivable to them. They can't wrap their head around it necessarily. But if that's a sincere question, I would walk them through the biblical passages. Then you might encounter some resistance to the Bible itself. But then I would want to walk them through, okay, well, how has the church articulated this in a coherent, philosophically reasonable way to show there isn't an inconsistency? That might not be something you get into in one meeting with the person, but if it's a sincere question, I wouldn't want to blow past it. Because in the long run, they might forget their question. They might, in the long run, it may not work in terms of, you know, it may not convince that person that you actually gave them the time of the day to entertain their question. I think. Does that answer your question? I don't know if it does or not, but I wouldn't want to go the route of not talking about logic and reason, because our God is a coherent God. It doesn't mean that we understand all the implications of the Trinity, and I honestly don't know why 6 million Jewish people were systematically slaughtered. I don't know. I don't know the answer to why, to that question. Can anyone think of questions that Jesus asked? Make sure we're doing okay on time here. Can he? That's a good one. That's a good one. Good teacher, why do you call me good? So some of the estimates, Jesus asked hundreds of questions. Okay. Why do you call me good? Anybody else have another one they can think of?
Can I have a drink?
Can I have a drink? John 4, right? Jesus is asking a woman questions in public. Risky. But he did it. How about this? Matthew 16:15. He says, "Who do you say that I am?" to Peter. Some say he came to Caesarea Philippi, and he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, others say Jeremiah or one of the prophets." And then he says, "Who do you say that I am?" He's asking a question about his identity. Who do you personally think that I am? Or there's Mark 10. I lost my bookmark here. Mark 10. Mark 10, 51. And Jesus said, so he's talking to blind Bartimaeus. And Jesus says to a blind guy, "What do you want me to do for you?" Self-knowledge. This is a passage that's kind of sandwiched in between the disciples really not seeing who Jesus is. They're arguing about who's the greatest. And Jesus is saying, whoever's going to be first among you ought to be the servant of all. And then they come to Jericho and they encounter a man who's blind, who can't see. Sometimes Jesus, Luke 20, verse 4, Jesus was teaching the people in the temple and preaching the gospel. So Jesus is preaching the gospel. The chief priests and the scribes with the elders came up and said to him, "Tell us by what authority you do these things, or who it is that gave you this authority." He said, "I'm also going to ask you a question. Now tell me, was the baptism of John from heaven or from man?" And then they go on and they think, listen, he's trying to trap. He's going to expose us. He's going to trap us. If we say this, then this is going to happen. If we say that, then people are going to get upset. And Jesus says, "Neither will I tell you by what authority I'm doing these things." He's trying to expose their hypocrisy, show the insincerity of their question. Okay? Why do you think Jesus asked questions? I mean, he knew everything, so like, why bother? Why did Jesus ask questions? Yeah. Jesus is a master teacher. He's an engager of minds. Like, he just doesn't go poof and zap people with the knowledge of whatever it is he wants them to know. Like he could do that, but he doesn't do that. How do you learn best? I'm not talking about like learning styles, like I'm a tactile person or I'm an audio. Like, how do you learn best though?
When you come to the conclusion.
That's 100% right.
I think about what you were saying with the sales pitch. We don't want to give someone a sales pitch of the gospel. But if they can come to the understanding themselves and conclusion themselves, it's a whole lot more effective.
That's right. There's an interesting book. I'm not recommending like this whole thing, wholesale, like How to Win Friends and Influence People, like Dale Carnegie. Like one of the things that he says, one of his kind of 9 principles is like, I'm paraphrasing it, but like the sweetest sound in any language is the person's own name. It's the same with how we reach the conclusions that we come to. If you come to an answer yourself through a reasoning process, it's going to be much more effective for that thing to stick in your mind as opposed to somebody saying this, this, this. You'll forget that in a minute, as soon as you walk out. But if you come to the conclusion yourself or you're involved in the process, it's going to stick with you. All right? Who here wants to be more like Jesus? Me, right? So we've got to ask good questions. Questions are a good way to engage the mind, I think you said, Jenny, to engage people as human beings. What do you think Jesus, can somebody turn to Mark? We're almost out of time, aren't we? Can someone turn to Mark 1, verse 15, and read that, please? Anybody, it doesn't matter. What is Jesus after? Like when he shows up on the scene publicly in terms of his ministry, what is Jesus after? What does he say he's after in that verse? I'm sorry? Repentance. Okay, good. What is repentance? Change of what? Okay. Did someone else? Change of mind. Okay, so we like to make this, that's a great point. We like to make this head, heart split totally foreign to the Bible, completely foreign to the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament. In the Bible, the turning, the change of mind is a change of, yes, intellectual, but also your will, your heart, your emotions. It's a turning. So it's not just this intellectual thing and that's it. It's not just the emotions and that's it. It's both together. If that's what Jesus is after, that's why he's engaging. He's engaging the whole person through his questions. His engagement with people is concrete. Like he doesn't have a lot of time. I'm not saying that you always got to be careful when you say Jesus doesn't have time for abstract questions because he is the second person of the Trinity. But he doesn't have a ton of time in the Gospels for abstract questions. So one example is in Matthew 22:23-24. The Sadducees come and start asking him questions. Well, okay, what happens if this guy gets married and then his wife dies and then his brother marries her and this whole thing, this hypothetical that they give him. Whose wife is she in the end? Because all of his brothers married her. And Jesus actually cuts right past it and says, you don't understand the scriptures or the power of God. And then he gives them his answer. There's neither in the kingdom of heaven. There isn't marriage. People aren't being given in marriage. You need to know the power of God. He doesn't have a ton of time. So he's concrete in his questions. He's in the nitty gritty of everyday life. He connects with people. How many times when you're reading the gospel, I totally blow by this, but I was thinking about this the other day. In preparation for this, how many times in the Gospels does it say, and he looked at her, or he looked at this person, he connected with them, he looked at Martha, or he looked at this person and connected with them. So his questions involve connecting with people, compassion. Think about some of the most compassionate, kind questions that Jesus ever asked Peter. Right? John 21. Simon Peter, what did he ask him three times? Do you love me? This wasn't for Jesus' benefit. This is for Peter's benefit. Because what did Peter do? He turned tail and he ran and he denied Jesus three times. There's a reason why Jesus kindly and compassionately asked that question three times. He also asked questions with curiosity and courage. Like it's not that Jesus doesn't know everything about people, but he engages them with open-ended questions, not multiple choice stuff. Stuff that makes them think and reflect and engages the whole human person. And I think we're at the end of our times. Does that make sense to anybody? Hopefully this wasn't just a big blob of questions kind of launched out there. But I think evangelism and asking good questions is huge you don't even have to limit this to evangelism. Like, it could, discipleship is the same way. Like, walking alongside other Christians, just asking good questions, getting into their life. But evangelism in particular, I think it's really helpful for clearing away obstacles to the faith. So I had a list of questions. Maybe I'll give them to Jeremy that I like to use, because sometimes you get to talk like this and then people are like, okay, questions are important, but I can't think of any. I've got a bunch of questions that I wrote down that I was going to go through, but I'll maybe have Jeremy or somebody send those out. So anyways, somebody want to, Darwin, you want to pray? Sorry.